Card presents Back Issue Bloodbath with your hosts, Andrew Young and Petula Neal.
Hey, Petula.
Hi.
Hi. Say, if I wanted you to make an invention to clean the floors in my house, and I wanted it to be, like, Canadian branded, I wanted it to be small, and I wanted it to be loud, and you went and made that invention, who's the inventor?
If you could have invented Facebook, you would have invented Facebook? I don't know, man. What if I make something and it doesn't suck? Do I still get the credit? But then somebody copies the idea and makes something that does suck. I don't know.
And that's something of a bit of a conundrum that we have here on this week's episode of Back Issue Bloodbath. I'm Andrew Young.
I'm Petula Neal.
We're not, of course, talking about making a better vacuum. I'm not looking for somebody to reinvent the Roomba. What we're actually talking about this week is the creation of a character. This idea for this episode kind of sprouted from something that happened at the end of March and was a big topic of conversation on the internet at the beginning of April when editor Bobby Chase went on her Facebook page on March 30th and basically put out this statement. Recently, my friend and Len Wein's widow, Christine Vallada, got a call from Marvel executive David Bogart informing her that in the upcoming Wolverine and Deadpool movie coming out this July, Roy Thomas will now be credited as the co-creator with Len Wein and John Romita Sr., and David said it's a done deal. I was standing in Christine's kitchen this past Sunday as she told me about the phone call. Of course, Christine is seriously concerned about Len's legacy. Len was profoundly important in the comic book industry, and that legacy is being changed for the worse 6 years after his death. She would go on to basically explain that Roy Thomas is the only person involved with Wolverine or Marvel editorial at that time who is still alive. Of course, Stan Lee passed away in 2018. Herb Trimpe passed away in 2015. John Romita Sr. passed away last year, 2023. And Len Wein died in 2017. And so Roy Thomas now is being credited as a co-creator by Marvel. Now, Roy has gone out and said, I have not changed my story on this. I have said for years that I am the co-creator of Wolverine. I've said it to anybody who will listen. I've said that I was the one who said, I want a Canadian character. I was the one who said, the character should be named Wolverine. In fact, I debated between Wolverine or Badger because I wanted a Canadian animal. And Wolverine sounded better, sounded fierce, and Badger had the sound of, like, also meaning to bug somebody, to badger them, so I wanted Wolverine.
Yeah, honey then, badgers didn't have the rep yet that they
that's
got
right,
later
that's
on.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Back in the 70s, the honey badger gave a shit and we didn't care. But anyway.
Yeah, they didn't have the PR team they have.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And then he also said, I wanted him to be small because the animal Wolverine is smaller and takes on animals 10 times their size, and all other superheroes are tall and big, and so these are the things I wanted. And I gave these ideas to Len, and Len created the character, and John Romita Sr. created the look, and then Herb Trimpe and Len Wein drew the first story because I wanted him to debut in Incredible Hulk, because Incredible Hulk was a character that did not stay in New York. He traveled, and so he could go to Canada and have this story. But does that constitute creation? To have an idea and to create a product are two different things. It's not like he said, these are all the things, the attributes of the character. This is what I want him to have: black hair. I want him to have a yellow suit. I want him to be cagey. I want him to be part of the Canadian government. I want him to drink beer. I want him to say A and bub. I want him to, like, he didn't give the characteristics of the character. He said, character name Wolverine, Canadian short. Does that constitute creation of a character? Len Wein's widow says, no, it does not, because Len was the person who breathed this character into life, and it is one of his legacies, and I don't want my husband's legacy to be tarnished by saying, oh, he wasn't the real creator. He was given the ideas, and then he helped with the creation, so Roy is a co-creator. Roy had the original idea. I don't want that. But then Herb Trimpe, who died in 2015, he said in 2012 that in his mind, Roy Thomas was the creator. And Roy Thomas went on to say that if he was a writer when Stan was editor and Stan told him, this is a character, I want this, I want that, go make it, I would consider Stan the creator or co-creator of the character.
Stan would definitely consider himself the creator.
We'll definitely get into that later.
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering, like, the thing is, what part does it come from, hey, these are the things I want, to I am actually helping you create this character? Because we know we've talked about editors. I've even talked to editors who have had a hands-on connection to the creation of a character. Of course, probably the best, most recent example of this would be Sana Amanat at Marvel Comics, who co-created Ms. Marvel with G. Willow Wilson and Adrian Alfona, because a lot of that character's characteristics were based on Sana's life growing up in Jersey. And so that right there, you can look at that and you see, oh, yeah, Sana can point to moments in her life that are exactly like Kamala Khan. So yes, she had a huge hand in creating it. But when someone like Roy Thomas, who was working on many different comics at the time and writing some, not writing The Incredible Hulk, Len Wein was writing The Incredible Hulk, just goes, I want a character like this, go do it. While he might have given a lot of time to think about it, he has given three or four sentences to a person and said, go do this. Is he still a creator?
So while I was doing research for this, I think back to my time working at agencies and the concept of a creative brief. So a client will often give an agency a creative brief. So a client may have a so-called like head of creative or somebody with a title that sounds like they're the one doing things. And they are, to a certain extent. They're saying, for this activity, campaign, whatever, I want this. So they give a brief, and agencies can respond to that. Maybe the brief will be accompanied by like a request for proposal. Maybe a brief just goes to their agency of record. And then the people who work at that agency will take that brief and create the thing that ends up being perhaps something that wins, you know, your Golden Lions or whatever. But when you go to those awards, the company person is credited along with the people at the agency for creating the thing. So if you think of Mad Men, we spend all of our time with Don and Peggy and the folks, but when they're winning awards, there's always somebody from the company, especially if they were not the whole creator of the concept, but if they're given a brief, then maybe kind of depending on what side of the fence you're on this, like ride along or part of the team. So if the origin, Wolverine, the origin of this, I feel like is one of those, I gotta say that he should get some credit for creation.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. If you think, is a sperm donor a parent or do you have to be involved? I think we're more than sperm donation on this one.
Okay. Okay.
All yeah.
Right. All right. Well, it's like, seeing this whole thing,
the intention to create the life is whoever puts the sample in, if you go to a donor, versus intentional or unintentional life creation. The life that's created has had input from many people. Could it have happened without that specific sperm donor? Sure, because they never donated. You could just take the next jar on the shelf. But this is intentional life creation.
Right.
Input into the creation.
No, you brought up a very interesting point there. If this person was taken out of the equation, would the character be created? That is an interesting thought I did not think about before, because Roy Thomas was the person who said, I want a character called Wolverine. I want him to be Canadian. And I want him to be small. If you don't have those three components, which are very big components for this character, and they're not there, well, then that's not the character. So that is a very valid point. Just because they are very base and basic doesn't mean that they aren't integral to the creation. Of course, Len would, you know, give the character much more than that in the issue of Incredible Hulk 181, but those things had to be there. Because, like, also you got to think about it, is that things that Wolverine is best known for, like the fact that the claws come out of his body and are inside his body, that came from Dave Cockrum in X-Men. The Wolverine mask, the Batman type looking mask, that came from Gil Kane accidentally drawing the original costume wrong. And then the facial features of Wolverine in these issues, he doesn't take off his mask. It's not until Dave Cockrum's X-Men that he suddenly has, you know, the look and face and feel that we come to know happens there. Then Chris Claremont, he probably, you'd say probably 80% of the things we know about Wolverine were things that Chris Claremont wrote.
I look at Chris Claremont to the X-Men sort of like Whitney Houston to I Will Always Love You. Listen, Ride or Die for Dolly, that woman's a saint and a genius.
Yeah.
However, if there hadn't been the Whitney Houston version, would this generation, especially people outside of country, know that song as much? Would that song be as iconic?
Yeah.
Would that song be used in so many ways? Would we see it everywhere from like Gilmore Girls to Fresh Off the Boat to every other place that's shown up? Maybe, maybe not. But obviously 100% Dolly. This is like a different sort of creation versus like making something so iconic it becomes part of the zeitgeist forever. And that's like where the Claremonts
come in.
I
would like to put a caveat on that saying both Claremont and John Byrne. If it wasn't for John Byrne really liking drawing Wolverine, Wolverine might not even be around anymore because Cockrum really didn't like drawing him and started putting him in the back. And it got to the point where Claremont was thinking about killing the character off. But when John Byrne came onto the book and was such a big fan of drawing him, suddenly he was front and center in every panel and he was looking dynamic and Claremont suddenly had all these ideas for him. So did John Byrne as well. When it comes to the Wolverine that we know today, as much as Len Wein's creation of it is important and Roy Thomas's original concept ideas were important, when it comes to the character we know, Chris Claremont and John Byrne created that personality and those attributes. So yeah, it's an interesting thing to look at the you know, a character like this. And it made me go, we should really look back at the times when people have claimed creation for certain characters over other creators and like take a look at them. Of course, probably the most heinous of the bunch is going all the way back to Batman, because Bob Kane created a character called Batman, but it looked very different than the Batman that we would see in Detective Comics. And it would be the work of two men be under Bob Kane that would really bring out these characters. Of course, Bill Finger. Kane said for years, all the ideas were mine, but then admitted in a 1980s audio interview that 50 to 75% of all the creativity in Batman came from Bill Finger. And then, of course, the artist Jerry Robinson. It's Jerry Robinson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jerry Robinson, who would make Batman look iconic, redefine the drawings, make him have a much more interesting look, draw the first Joker. These two men created the Gotham City we know under Bob Kane. And Bob Kane took all the credit at the time. And for a long time after that, Bill Finger was never recognized as a co-creator of Batman while he was alive.
And even just getting him added still gets people's backup. Like, and they're, you know, due to legal machinations, it's like a with attribution in some of the films, I believe, like not a, they can't legally say co-creator. So it's a very, with special guest star Heather Locklear kind of vibe, but not as, it feels more begrudging.
Yeah. They're like, oh yeah. And Bill Finger. There he is. Yeah. Where it's like, Bill Finger was kind of like the unsung hero. And if there was no Bill Finger there, the Batman character would have been a much more campy, a much more like, think of the 60s TV show, but even 10 times lighter and campier than that. There would be no real mystery to the character. There would be no real detectiviness to it. And Gotham City itself probably would not be a character, because most of the ideas of what initially created Gotham and made it what it is came from Bill Finger. The other thing that I want to bring up is that Finger not only got kind of shafted on Batman, but on the original Green Lantern, Alan Scott as well. A number of the ideas for that book were created by him, and he went uncredited for those too. So Bill Finger was like shafted twice back during the golden age of comics.
Fool me once, fool me twice. It's also an industry of people who, the people who have either a very good kind of business head or are kind of just sharks, definitely seem to rise to the top. And it does kind of change now in this new era. Like now, ever since like basically 2007, it's a lot easier for people to have receipts due to just the modern devices and phones and everything else. But before then, it's basically whoever has the best representation or highest ranking title wins. And that we even know a handful of these stories just makes you wonder how many more people didn't even have enough evidence and were buried by larger, more litigious companies when they tried to tell their story.
Yeah, we alluded to it before, and I guess we'll get into it now. Probably the most famous comic creator ever is Stan Lee. And the main reason why he's the most famous comic creator ever is that he was a person that was a character. He went out there more so than any other comic creator out there and kind of stood on the pulpit selling comics, going wherever he could, you know, going to Hollywood, going to colleges across North America, basically singing the praises of comic books. And he was kind of like the poster child for the comic creator out there in front of his creations. And, you know, because of that, like without Stan Lee, there's no comic industry the way it is now in North America, because no other creator put a spotlight on the comics industry like Stan Lee did. Stan Lee was very good at seeing the mediums in front of him that were adjacent to comics and going, we should get our voices out there. And to that, I say thank you, Stan. Stan, you'll always be one of my faves because of that. But unfortunately, I feel like in the 1970s and late 60s, when auteur filmmaking became such a big deal, and as for people who don't know, auteur filmmaking is when the filmmaker basically says, everything that happened in this film is my vision. Nothing happened without me. Saying that they are the sole author and that they birthed the film into creation. Francis Ford Coppola saw himself as an auteur. Martin Scorsese, in a sense, saw himself as an auteur. Steven Spielberg saw himself as an auteur. Even George Lucas, to an extent, saw himself as an auteur. And that style of filmmaking became very big in the late 60s, early 70s, and that idea, around the same time that Stan Lee was going out there to events and talk shows and things like that to talk about comics. And Stan kind of took on that auteur idea that, well, I created all these characters because I sat down and said, we're going to write a book about Spider-Man. And these are the things I want on Spider-Man. And he saw himself as the sole creator. For years, he wouldn't say that he was a co-creator. He said, I'm the creator. Steve Ditko had a major problem with that. And Steve Ditko said, you know, more than half those issues that I did with you, the plots were created by me. The characters were created by me. You would write the script. And half the time, you would write a different opposing thought than I had, because Stan Lee was very liberal. And Steve Ditko, I wouldn't say conservative. I feel
well, chaotic maybe, neutral.
Yeah, very much the whole, there's a wrong and there's a right. And if you do the wrong, well, whatever happens to you is on you. If you make a mistake, you're bringing it on yourself. It's Rorschach. That's basically what Steve Ditko thought. In fact, Steve Ditko created a character that Alan Moore based Rorschach on called Mr. A. But anyways, they had opposing viewpoints. And so Stan would introduce stuff in the dialogue that Ditko had no interest in. But again, he was basically saying, this is just as much mine as it is yours. Even if you're the one who said, oh, I want like a character called Spider-Man. And Stan said, fine, I will tell people you're the co-creator. And that's the way Stan tells the story. Mm-hmm. But Stan never admits that Steve is the co-creator. And so this caused a major rift between Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. And of course, for years has created a major, the entire time while Jack Kirby was alive, this was something that was a dispute between Jack Kirby and Stan Lee as well, to the point that there was I believe in the early 90s, a radio call-in show where they had Jack Kirby on, I believe it was his birthday. And Stan called in to say, hey, and by the end of that interview, it turned into a fight. Now, both were very civil, but it was basically Stan saying, I wrote every word in that comic. And Jack saying, you know, I did write some dialogue, you know, in the margins of my pages. I like to think that I was a writer as well. And Stan was like, I never used them. And Jack's like, no, I think you did. It was a very uncomfortable, situation. And in 2023, all of this was brought back up again with the Disney Plus documentary, Stan Lee. The documentary is put together, but all the dialogue in it is stuff from interviews and recordings by Stan. So Stan is telling the story. And because Stan is telling the story, he created all these characters. And so I'm not going to dispute that he created the characters. It's just he wasn't the sole creator. Yet he was obsessed with seeing himself as the sole creator.
I wonder if, and, you know, crunch the numbers. One thing I can 100% give Stanley credit for is probably whole divisions of law firms that specialize in IP and creators suing multiple comic book companies, but especially Marvel in researching this. And also just the beef, if he could have even just used the word we a little more often, maybe fewer people would have been like, I'm going to sue too, because like 100% I created this. Homie Steve Gerber, who created Howard the Duck, would he have sued if Stan had been in these streets? Was this just, are there whole meetups, like probably like whatever the equivalent of like old comic book creator WhatsApp groups of people just, well, I'm going to sue now too, just because this guy could not stop. Would not stop saying, I created. I worked with people like that when I was younger. And I do think there's a certain pathology that you can't fix. And in a way, it excuses them. It's like the whole, oh, mental illness when somebody does something not okay or mass shootery, that even if you tell them, like I've noticed when we're in meetings or whatever, when I know, like I was there with my own eyes. I saw that you didn't do this, like someone else on your team did this or whatever. But because they report to you and you assign them the work, or even just you're on the same team, but you're the one who gets to go to these meetings, you use the term I a lot. And there's no attribution to other people, whether it's a vendor or other people who actually did the work, actually came up with the approach, did like 99.99% of the thing. But in the meetings, they would attribute it to themselves. And I also learned very early in my kind of professional career, the people who do that really don't like it when you play that.
Yeah.
So all that to say, we all know someone like that. We all know multiple someones like that. And I don't think that he was capable of sharing credit. Mm. And I think if he had either 1%, 10%, or 30%, or even being on the higher side of like 80% involvement in the creation of a character, it was always going to be, in his mind, he was the creator.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think it also comes, oddly enough, comes to the way he was raised. He was raised during a time that it was hard to get jobs. And if you got a job, you'd want to cling to it and hold on to it. And so I think there is a level subconsciously of, if I'm not the sole creator of these characters, what is my worth to this company and to this industry? It is a very me-centric thought, but it is one that I feel growing up from the generation that he did was not uncommon.
And he does also have that kind of employee number X energy, because he did start off as like assistant at Timely, like when he was a teenager.
Yeah.
So when you're there, like in the before, like you're there when the startup has like fewer than 10 employees and you've been there the whole time and other people come in and out, but you're ride or die. There is a certain amount of deference that people who come after will show that person, if only just because they're outlasting, outwitting, outplaying everybody in that game of corporate survivor. But they do have that institutional knowledge, and they are, to a certain extent, kind of part of what kept the place going. To your point, he was like the first evangelist before that was like a job title, or yeah, one of the first evangelists, like, you know, go out, bang the drum, and definitely probably at many points during lags in the industry, probably felt like I'm like the only one out here trying to keep this thing alive.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you already have that kind of mindset of, regardless of how many people are on the group project, whether it's 2, 5, or 10, you will always be the one who ends up talking for most of the time when it goes time to present in front of the class. And you actually are one of the earliest employees. I understand. I don't excuse, but I understand. But he also didn't understand the degree to which his behavior, in a way, probably helped change the industry sooner than it might have. Like, you know, attempts to unionize early didn't happen, but all of the spinoff kind of creator owned approaches, all of that, I'm not blaming him all for that, but his vibes definitely probably pushed more people to be like, I'm going to make my own thing. I'm going to negotiate. So on the two ends of who's the reason why people might negotiate for better contracts now, him and Kirkman, like for different reasons of like, oh my God, Kirkman's got money now. And if I'm going to work for these people and they're going to treat me like that, then I'm going to maybe go do my own thing, start my own imprint, do independent stuff. Maybe I'll still be living as a pauper, but I'll just do my own Kickstarter thing because at least that's my name on it. And the guy at the office that claims to have assigned me the task to do this can't just slap his name on it too as he's presenting it. And the next thing you know, he's getting interviewed as he created it. So yeah, it's weird energy. But he should get the credit for what he's done for the industry. But the amount of credit is where I'd say probably everyone who's ever worked with him would argue for individual characters, he gives himself too much and others too little. That's... But again, he is more than the donor. He is more than the stranger donor on the shelf. But is he like the hit and quit it on prom night for some of these characters that he claims total ownership of the origin?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you on that. But yeah, sadly though, like you bring up the non-Marvel and DC, the creator-owned titles. And even in that regard, over the past 20 years, a lot of creators that have come out and said, I haven't been given enough credit on the creation of this character or this book. This person has kind of taken all the credit. And I'm guessing, I know with your research, there's probably a couple that stick like right up to the top.
I mean, obviously editors, and we know from talking to some of our favorite editor friends or some of our favorite editors that also write and create, they could give, you know, Ann Nesenti or Allison, like we have spoken to these people and we know that for different titles, even they themselves, they have different levels of involvement on what the final output is. However, when you think of other roles that are even less likely to get any kind of creator credit, colorists as well, and that's where you think like Bill Crabtree sued Kirkman over Invincible. And this is another situation of, well, is what you brought to it enough of an impact to say that you should be considered part of the creator team versus just the creative team? Hurt people.
Yeah.
Because yeah. he was hurt and then became very litigious and very territorial with any future output that he was a part of due to the way he was treated by Marvel.
But when it comes down to it, you know, as you said, Roy Thomas should have some credit, but what kind of credit should that be? You know, in Roy's eyes, he's the first creator of Wolverine, but does that make him the most important? These are the questions. Like when we see this credit in Deadpool or Wolverine, is it going to say Wolverine created by Roy Thomas, Len Wein, and John Romita Sr.? Or is it going to say Len Wein, John Romita Sr., and Roy Thomas? Who knows? We'll find out this summer. Until then, you know, I guess we're just going to have to take these things case by case. I will say Petula was surprising because I came into this ready to lambaste Roy Thomas, but you made some valid points right off the top and went, well, yeah, no, she's got a point there. I guess Roy does have some stake in this, so good for you, Roy.
I recently...
If you need a lawyer, Petula is...
I recently rewatched Devil's Advocate, starring one of our other favorite Canadians, Keanu, and maybe that's where all of this energy came from. Although after watching, I was like, the devil doesn't need an advocate, and like one should not be signing up.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is a Devil's Advocate situation. And I think what definitely pushed me in the direction of who should get it, who does get it, and why do they get it? If you replace Roy's name with Stan Lee, he would have always had the credit. If anything, sure. The other two would have been struggling.
Yeah. I agree with you there. Of course, people, if you're listening, we'd love to hear from you about other creator credit situations. You can email us at geekhardshow@gmail.com, put Back Issue Bloodbath in the subject line. And if we get enough of them, maybe we might do another episode where we examine creators and characters and credit all together. Triple C right there. We're going to the end of another episode of Back Issue Bloodbath. Petula, where can people find you?
At Inatif.com, on social things at Obesacantawit, OBESACANTAVIT, and here with you.
Of course, you can find everything I do over at geekhardshow.com. Follow me on Twitter at geekhard. Follow me on Instagram at Andrew_of_geek_hard. Of course, you can follow this very show on Facebook at Back Issue Bloodbath, where we post a new episode every week. Of course, the easiest way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe to us on your podcasting platform of choice. And then go out, read a comic, enjoy your life, and you know, just take stock and value in the things you have in your life and enjoy them. This has been Back Issue Bloodbath. I've been Andrew Young.
I've been Petula Neal.
Have yourself a good one.